Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat.
All right, welcome to this episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornrat.
This is an awesome one. I can't wait to introduce Will to everyone. But before we get into that, you need to make sure September 30th is marked on your calendar for our Business Podcast Forum. This is going to be for all of you who are interested in growing a business or growing a podcast, that focuses on your business. You want to do it. Podcasting's cool. C and I can attest to it, right?
Podcasting gives you credibility.
Exactly. It is a very good thing. So head over to innovationmediaenterprises.com/event and check out all the details September 30th. Use the code SIA. I'm going to use your code.
Okay, fine. S-Y-Y-A.
For another 20% off and join us for an all-day event focused on growing a podcast that grows your business. All right, let's talk about Will.
Yes.
This is an awesome one.
Okay, so here's the funny thing. I am very dependent on my car. That's just me being historically a Southern Californian. But I am now starting to come around to this whole ride-sharing concept. Aaron?
I've been ride-sharing for a while. Somebody introduced me to Uber like 10 years ago and I've been sold.
Right. But the whole thing is with all the recent spate of security, safety, especially as female, we stumbled upon Alto and Mr. Will Coleman is the CEO of Alto and he joined us today. And I cannot tell you how excited I am with, I thought they were just basically a glorified taxi cab company.
No, they're amazing.
It's much more than that. And it really, if we can say anything, guys, it's the experience. A, we just had a great experience talking to Will about his vision and the future of ride sharing, but just ideally in general, like just the future of ride sharing and the comforts and that we will come to expect.
Yeah. So in this episode, we talked just where the idea came from, how he's growing it. They just got a massive load of funding. You're going to see them hopefully in other cities soon. If you're in Dallas, check them out. I'm going to try them next week. I'm so excited. I love this conversation just about the vision, the technology, how technology is being used to really drive a greater experience and what's in the future for Alto.
Yeah, I know. I mean, just, again, Will, once you hear him, you guys, he left a very cushy job to start his own business. So there's a lot of, I think, great tidbits and learning lessons we can learn from Will.
All right. So without further ado, here is our episode with Will Coleman of Alto. All right. Welcome to Innovation Calling. And Will, welcome here to our studio. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Your voice really trips me out, Will. It's killing me.
I know. It's so good.
Have you ever got a face and a voice for radio?
Oh, stop it, you.
Yeah.
Well, I was saying we have faces for radio, but I don't know what our voices are for because it's not for radio.
Well, we have voices for podcasting.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. So, Will, thank you so much for joining us. We have been learning about Alto on and off in random conversations over time. So it's such an honor to have you sitting with us because we've been talking about you guys and now you're right in front of me. So I don't know. I'm kind of in awe right now.
Yeah. Well, and I'm very excited because before we recorded, I was telling you, I love ride sharing. I hate taxi cabs. I've always had bad experience. So I'm used to ride sharing now. I love the whole concept. I'm all in. But I feel like now there's these opportunities. I'm not going to bash anybody, but now there's these opportunities to really up the game of ride sharing because there's been some stories. I'm nervous about some of them. So I absolutely love what you guys are doing and so excited to talk about this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So help me, Will, what is Alto exactly? Because I think when we talked about it, I think we had a preconceived notion. So can you help us understand exactly what is Alto?
Sure. The simplest way to think of Alto is that we are rideshare elevated. Alto actually means elevated in Spanish or Italian. Tall or high, and so we think of it as elevated. And we're elevating the experience for passengers, for drivers, and for the communities in which we operate. And so that's really what we set out to do is to create the rideshare experience that now many of us are becoming so comfortable with, but in a better and an elevated way.
Do you think, is it a public demanding a better experience, or you just saw a gap and said, you know what, this could be better?
We think both, right? I mean, we believe that the data shows that there is a large and underserved population of the of the US in particular that's looking for a safer, more consistent, and higher quality experience. And safety and consistency are really what we think of when it comes to elevation, right? What we're targeting is women, professionals, and families who have those needs for a safe and consistent experience. They know what they are, they know that they want to get what they expect every single time. And so we want to be the Starbucks of rideshare, right? We want you to know every time you request a ride that it's going to smell the same, that it's going to look the same, that the service is going to be the same quality, it's going to be safe. And that's the reason people go to Starbucks. And we think that's the reason that people will choose to use Alto over alternatives.
So can you talk a little bit about your background and, you know, I mean, we all saw the gap. Talk a little bit about what you saw specifically and what made you want to jump into this game.
Yeah, I was a consultant for a long time, the first 11 years of my career. I was a partner at McKinsey & Company based here in Dallas and leading the consumer travel practice for the firm and spending all of my time working with consumer travel companies, airlines, hotels, rental car companies, and understanding the impacts and the disruption that rideshare was having on their businesses. If you think about the travel industry, it's really changed everything in terms of how people get to airports, right? So airports now need to think about their parking structures in a totally different way, how people interact with hotels and get to a hotel. People, they need to think about arrivals and do they need house cars anymore? And so rental car companies obviously changing their business dramatically. And so I spent the better part of 4 or 5 years in the early to mid 2000s, kind of understanding this industry and the impact that it was having broadly. I got really deep in the business models of Uber and Lyft and understanding what they were bringing to the market. And I was really intrigued by the disruption that was happening, but I was left feeling that there were some gaps. And, you know, as I was traveling around as a consultant using rideshare, I tell people all the time the rideshare really changed my life. It brought a convenience to having transportation in any city that I traveled to that didn't really exist before. And at the same time, as it became more convenient, it became less consistent. And I found myself in new cities thinking, I'm not going to use an Uber or Lyft today because I want to find a car that I can trust, a driver that I can trust, that I can take a conference call and show up knowing I'm not going to smell like cigarettes or have to listen to EDM on my ride.
Wait, what's wrong with EDM?
EDM's fine if as long as you're not on a conference call with a client. In which case, it makes it a little bit difficult to hear and for them to hear you. So, you know, if we're doing this podcast with EDM in the background, it might be a problem. And I realized that my needs were starting to not be met. And then I also realized my wife didn't have either of the apps on her phone. She was really concerned about her personal safety, the intimacy of getting in someone else's car, getting picked up at our house or dropped off at our house, leaving to go to the airport. So the only time she was using these things that had changed my life was with me. And as I got into the research and really started to understand the market and the consumer sentiment, we saw those two needs really prevalent. My needs and her needs were not being met by the existing providers. And that was a pretty big market that we thought if we could change the game in a way that met those needs, that we could create a viable alternative to what was already existing today, a better and higher quality experience, safer.
So with your background, tell us the next steps, because I know, you know, where did you see as challenges? This isn't something you came, it's not like you came from another ride sharing company. You're like, I'm sure. Just going to make it better. Tell us a little bit about the challenges and what you were doing to overcome those as you built this new company.
Well, no question. The biggest challenge was that, you know, most people that I told the idea to thought I was crazy, right? I mean, we're trying to create something admittedly in a market that is already relatively saturated, has raised tens of billions of dollars and spent much of that money building, you know, massive customer bases. And so disrupting that kind of industry is, you know, no small feat. There's no question that what we're trying to do is going to be very hard for a long time. And so I think what ultimately got me most excited about it was that a lot of smart people that I know first told me that I was crazy, but then when I explained to them a little bit more about what we were doing, they said, that makes sense. And so I figured if I could convince smart people that originally thought I was crazy, that this was a good idea, that was a sign that there really was something there, something to attack. But that said, it's still, you know, we're what I call disrupting the disruptors. And that is no question going to be hard for a very long time, because we're going up against companies that have lots of money, lots of talent, lots of capabilities and technology and in operations. And we're starting from scratch and trying to build that. And so, no, you know, that's we're going to be fighting an uphill battle for a long time.
But I think the experience, we have to keep going back to the experience is going to be the differentiator. Because, like, for me, when I travel in other cities, states, et cetera, I do get nervous when I jump into that car and trust. I'm trusting this person's going to take me to the destination. And perfect example, I just went to Turks and Caicos in April, landed at 9 p.m., there's nothing going on in that island.
No.
When I landed, it was like pitch darkness, even at the airport.
Sounds like my kind of island.
Yeah. Well, not when you're by yourself trying to find your friends. But yeah, no, we're on a shuttle bus, and it was me and this two other ladies, which was the mother-daughter, and the guy dropped the mother-daughter off first. And then as we're leaving, he goes, hey, I'm going to take a shortcut. And I'm like, no, you're not. I'm on the phone with my boyfriend at the time, and I'm like really steaming upset because he was supposed to come on this trip, but he didn't. That's a long story. That's another story. But so I'm on the phone with him, and he's in Dallas. I'm in Turks and Caicos. And he goes, oh, okay, you're going to be dropped off. Bye. And I'm like, no. We're staying on the phone. We're talking. But I got to tell you, that was the most uncomfortable 15-minute ride ever, because nothing's going on. It's not lit. It's Turks and Caicos. It's an island. It's not like you're going to see tons of lights and all that stuff. And this guy's weaving, bobbing around the island. And thank God we got to where he got to. But I could tell that guy probably like was pissed off that I was thinking he's going to kill me at any point. But I just kept talking to my boyfriend. I'm like, nope. Yeah. If I'm going to die, at least there'll be some kind of connection of like something happened to her, right? And I gave him a play-by-play with anything that I saw. So
what's your question?
Well, I think it just reminded me
just reminded me that security and the experience. Yeah, I mean, it is so critical now, especially. And on top of that, there's a generation of folks that do not want to drive or do not want to get driver's license now. Oh. And so now you've got a whole massive population that is looking for this kind of service.
Because I'm not going to put my kid in an Uber. No way. Like,
well,
as they get older.
That's why we focus on experience. Yeah. And you said exactly that word, right, is that Uber and Lyft are technology companies. They've said since their inception that they are building technology. They're not transportation companies. They actually avoid being called that. We're going opposite of that point of view and say, we're not a tech company. We're an operating company. We're a service company. And we use technology to enable our service, but our product is not the app. Our product is the ride. And so when we think about how to make our product different, we focus not on, you know, anything that we could build into our app. There's no question that they could do better. Right. They have 20,000 engineers compared to our 12. So we've got a big disadvantage there. But where we have an advantage is that we have control over things that they don't. We control the vehicles. And that means that we can install technology in the vehicles that they can't put into their cars to ensure a safe ride for our passengers and for our drivers. We employ our drivers, which they don't currently do. Although if you're living in California, you know, and listening to this, the vote for AB5 is likely coming up in the next few days. And so we'll see how that pans out. It may have a big, big impact on their businesses. But by employing drivers and not using independent contractors, it means that not only can we select and vet people much better, but we can do things like train and performance manage, which are both illegal to do for independent contractors. And so those sorts of things mean that we can really focus on the experience in the car for our riders, for our drivers, and create something that we believe is truly differentiated.
So wait, you said that. What does that mean, being performance management? You cannot train them, or cannot?
It's illegal to train an independent contractor. That's part of the test of what makes somebody a contractor versus an employee. And so if you provide them training, they are now an employee. Yeah. So our drivers go through 3 days of training, which an Uber or Lyft driver cannot do. They can watch videos. They can have orientations. There's certain ways that they're kind of bending and adapting, but they can't train somebody. They can't performance manage somebody. So the reason that you rate your driver in those apps is because you can help performance manage by saying, I had a bad experience, and if you don't have a good enough rating, then you can't be on our platform. But you can't reach out to them and say, hey, we saw that you had a really harsh braking event, and we want to show you the video and help you understand why that happened and how you could avoid it the next time. that's something we can do because we're tracking the telematics of our vehicle and tracking the video of what's happening inside and outside the car. The other guys don't even want that data because they can't use it, and it could potentially increase their liability in a way that they can't actually do anything about it. And so we think that that's really where the difference is our ability to not only say, look, you know, to say we're going to create a better experience, but to use differences in our business model to actually create that.
So in the world of ride sharing and people loving all this flexibility, I want to create my own schedule, create my own money. How has hiring been for you guys? Has it been pretty simple? Have you been able to find the right people easily, or has that been another challenge?
This you know, what we call supply side or our drivers is really important to delivering on the quality of the product. Ultimately, our drivers and our vehicles are our product, and so making sure that we can find high quality drivers is of utmost importance. We really believe that the flexibility associated with the quote unquote gig economy is attractive, but that we can win on creating similar levels of flexibility with much better benefits for our employees. And we've proven here in Dallas so far that we're doing exactly that. So it is a job. You can't, like an Uber or Lyft, you can't just wake up one morning and decide, I'm either going to go to school today, or I'm going to drive, or I'm going to play Nintendo, or I'm going to drive, or whatever. I'm a parent, and my kids are at school, so I'm just going to take the opportunity. You have to sign up for shifts, and you need to show up for work, but you can select your shifts. So, with a little bit of trade-off, you can say, okay, well, I want to work nights, or I want to work weekends, or I want to work during the day. Once you've set that, we expect you to show up for your job, but we still think that's a high degree of flexibility that we can create because we're a 24/7 operation that's needs people at all times of day. And in exchange for kind of that slight trade-off in flexibility, we can give you much more consistency, right? You know, when you show up for work, you're going to get paid by the hour and not by the ride, which is a huge deal. I'm going to come to work today and I'm going to know that I'm going to go home with a paycheck, rather than I may go decide to work for 4 hours and sit at the airport and never get a ride. And I think that trade-off is the same that we're making with our customers. They're willing to pay a little bit more. We are more expensive, but they're willing to pay because of the consistency. And our drivers are willing to pay just a little bit in terms of flexibility in turn for that consistency as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit in an accident on the tollway and only get paid $20 for the 4 hours I'm sitting there.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
No, that totally makes
that
sense.
That kills you as another driver.
So you mentioned about the car itself and the technology around the car. Can we talk about that for a minute? Because I didn't realize, and maybe I should have done better research, my bad. I didn't realize there was actual video cameras in the car. I knew about the telemetry and that, but I didn't realize there was video. Tell me about the technology that's in your cars.
Sure.
Pretty please.
I'd be happy to. There's really three big pieces of technology that we install in each of our vehicles. The first is a telematics device that captures real-time information about over 3,000 different data points coming from the vehicle, from engine oil level and tire pressure to speed and acceleration. And so we capture all of that directly off of the vehicle through the ODB port, which is a small little dongle you can plug into underneath your steering column. That technology is connected to a video camera that captures interior and exterior video of the car, and overlays it on the telematics. So anytime a certain event occurs, we set parameters around what is a harsh acceleration or a deceleration or a tight turn or speeding. The camera also, by the way, has AI, which does facial recognition and detects distracted driving. So we get alerts of distracted driving events. All of that creates an immediate alert that is sent to our command center, and somebody can respond and make sure that that is either, a defensive action. Sometimes an acceleration or deceleration can be a good thing, and sometimes it can be something that we need to coach or performance.
If they're cranking up the brakes a lot, they're pumping the brakes a lot, right? Accelerating brakes.
Listening to that EDM just bouncing the car. So those sorts of things we can monitor in real time and use to protect our passengers and our drivers. So that's the first kind of joint piece of technology. The second is a Raspberry Pi. It's essentially a small computer that we install in the vehicle, and that also plugs in the ODB port and acts as a beacon for us to be able to detect passengers' proximity to the vehicle, and ultimately over time to control more and more aspects of the car. So we have the technology today. We're developing the software essentially to give our passengers control of things like the locks, the HVAC, the windows, because we really think that as part of that experience, we want to deliver as much control to our passengers as possible through our app. And so that computer in the car gives us kind of some parts of our experience today, and controls things like lights today, but over time will give us even more capacity to control other things in the car. And then the third thing is just it's kind of just a standard old cell phone, but it's mounted in a way that's integrated into the dash. And so that runs our driver app and several other supporting apps that do things like navigation and make sure the driver has information about their passenger and you know, knows where to go and where to pick you up and where to drop you off.
So I'm just having images of your call center and like sirens going off, going EDM alert, EDM alert. EDM. No, just kidding.
It's okay. We like EDM. I don't want to get the wrong impression. If you want to listen to EDM, you can select that in your app.
But it's so interesting you mentioned about the car, because again, I love to talk to rideshare drivers, and the one lady was telling me that her daughter told her that you always get in the front seat with the driver because they can't control the locks on you in the front seat, but they can control the locks on you in the back seat. I'm like, I never thought of that. So if you're a female by yourself, always get in the front. But that's awesome that you thought about it. So you've got a lot of amazing technology now. What's in the future for you guys too? I know there's
without NDAing yourself there.
Yeah.
Sure, no NDAs. Yeah, I mean, we think that everything that we can do to pour into the experience is where we really want to focus. And so, like I mentioned, I mean, we want to give our passengers, really, we believe that what we've done today is just the kind of what we call MVP, or the first version of that control, but that there's much more we can do there. And so I mentioned things like more lighting, more locks, HVAC. You can already control that from a pad in the back of the car. So you have control in that regard today, but we want you to feel like you're ordering your car, not someone else's car. And so the more and more we can do to create that experience when you're in our car, we think that'll be a real differentiator. And something that is that, you know, as when we think about investment in technology, we think about things that we can invest in that are uniquely possible for us. And so real differentiators, but also defensible differentiators, versus if we do something and then the other guys can just copy it faster and easier, that's, you know, that's probably not something we'll be investing in today.
What about self-driving? I don't know how much you can talk about it, but obviously it's a very big future of ride sharing. Where is that on your map? Again, I know you can only talk about so much, but where is that on your map, and what are you looking at? What are you looking into on that from that perspective?
Someday I'll have a huge legal team that will stop me from talking about things, but today that doesn't exist. So I can say whatever I want. Look, we believe that self-driving is the future, but it's a future that's still pretty far away, right? To be able to operate in the kinds of environments that we operate, and the types of pickups and drop-offs that we do on a daily basis, even just here in Dallas, is something that we believe is 15 years or so away. And so the time between now and then is really about, for us, spent on how to build the technology to optimize that fleet in the future. And we feel like by having control of the vehicle and control of the driver, we're able to do that also today in a way that no one else can. There's a lot, I think of it as a segue into maybe another topic we want to talk about, but you know, how we're supporting the cities and the societies that we're operating in, we can optimize for the whole, right? An individual driver on another platform is optimizing for themselves. And that creates a lot of entropy in the system, because you're competing with others to try and get that next ride. And what we're doing is optimizing the entire fleet to make the best outcome for Alto, not for any single driver, because every driver is our employee. And so the best outcome for everyone is that we do the best thing for everyone. And so we're almost today operating an autonomous fleet with human drivers, right? Because the drivers, not only can we give them passenger missions, but we can give them non-passenger missions. So we can decide when it's the right time for them to fuel or charge or go have service done on the vehicle or to position to another place because we expect demand to come from there soon. And it's those types of missions that we think on the optimization front make our service much more efficient for the communities we operate in, because we're able to control and optimize all of that versus just for that one driver looking for the next ride who might then want to, you know, be in the most congested area, adding additional congestion to that place because that's the best place for them, not the best place for, you know, the whole fleet.
It's so interesting you bring that up. Sorry, I was just going to say, so this is like, we were just driving home from San Antonio yesterday, and I told my husband, we had Waze on, and I guess it was Monday, but I said, I wish you could plug in where you are, like what your car gets mileage-wise, where you are, and it could tell you the exact optimal spot you should stop and get gas. I'm like, wouldn't that be so cool if it did that? And that's really cool you guys are doing that. So.
Yeah, no, I'm just liking the fact that you've touched on congestion, because as we've been talking to a lot of folks about smart cities and how that's being applied, and we're actually talking with some public sector folks on what they're envisioning and what they think is how they are going to roadmap a smart cities context. And so when you're talking about autonomous vehicles, Aaron, and you're talking about congestion, help me understand. I heard someone else talking about that the ride sharing economy or industry is going to increase congestion in the smart cities world. Do you agree, disagree with that statement?
Well, ride sharing, there's no question. I mean, that ride sharing today has increased congestion in the cities that it operates. I mean, the facts are pretty clear on that. And in particular, in large cities like San Francisco and New York, they are more congested today than they were before ride share existed. And one of the reasons for that is because of the nature of rideshare, right? The difference between rideshare and taxi is that you can't just pick somebody up on the street. You need them to book through your digital network, which is what differentiates us from a taxi company. And so that booking process means that there's a wait time, right? Versus just going out on the street and raising your hand. And to replicate a short wait time in major cities, a lot of companies have put more supply into the market than is really necessary. And so one of the things that, and so that means that there are many more cars on the road than are really needed to serve the amount of demand, but they need that many cars in order to have a couple minute wait time. And one of the things that we believe around consistency is that the reason that people demand that short wait time is because it's variable. And so in a variable world, you want it to be as short as possible because you're going to request it at the last second. But in a world where we can provide consistency, where we optimize the whole and can promise to our customers with relative certainty that we can always be to pick them up in 10 minutes, for example, the difference in the number of vehicles on the road we need to supply a 10-minute pickup time versus someone else might need to supply a 2-minute pickup time is 150 times fewer cars.
Wow.
So that is a huge impact on the number of vehicles on the road and ultimately the vehicle miles traveled or the VMT that occur with and without passengers, which is really the thing that we believe is the big differentiator in how we'll help reduce congestion. It's about, you know, by the way, in Dallas, for example, an ambulance shows up in 6 to 8 minutes if you call it. Right. And so to think that you really need a car to show up 3 to 4 times faster than an ambulance is a little bit insane. Right. So like, could we just all plan 10 minutes in advance? If we could plan 10 minutes in advance and say, I'm going to leave this podcast, it's wrapping up, I'm going to call my car, I'm going to take my time to get downstairs and it's going to be waiting for me. That's how we're going to change the game on congestion. It's going to be an effort between passengers and ride-sharing companies, because if passengers really do demand 2-minute pickup times, the whole thing falls apart. But we think that we can change that, and we are changing that already today, because our passengers wait 10 and a half minutes on average and still choose us over our competitors.
Well, I mean, quite frankly, I don't know if I've ever been ready in time to do things in 10 minutes. Whenever I call for a ride, I'm usually like in a hotel room. I'm like, oh, I'll meander my way down. I don't, maybe it's because I'm Californian, as far as I always had a car first off. But if I had to flag a car down or whatnot, at least you've got the security. And I don't mind waiting to have the security of knowing I'm going to be safe.
Well, no. So I always find it's a game with the other ride-sharing apps because they may tell you it's 10 minutes, but then the person's turning around and it's 20 minutes. So I'm like, well, I don't want to leave too soon. But and you're trying to play this game of, okay, when are you really going to get here versus what you say you're going to get here? And it's always been really frustrating for me. So do you actively work with the cities as you, like, in discussing with city planning, et cetera? Like, I know you're in Dallas right now, and especially as you expand, do you immediately get involved with the cities of how you can help and really work on partnerships?
Well, we just launched here in Dallas about 6 months ago, and so we're still kind of raising awareness of our offering and finding ways in which we can collaborate with the city more and more. We've had early discussions with parts of the city. We had a panel actually just last week with the Uptown Commission that controls a big part of kind of the residential and business sector near downtown. And we certainly think there are ways to continue to evolve that. We are, you know, with one of the busiest parts of downtown, Deep Ellum now, we're trying to work with the city to think about solutions for, we'd like to work with the city to think about solutions for how to solve the congestion problem there. And frankly, we have some differences of opinion than the city does on the way to solve those things. So we'll bring those to the table and bring data and facts to support them. And we do think that as we grow and become, you know, a more household name and more prominent in the cities that we operate, that we'll have more and more opportunities to do that. And that frankly, by proving what we are today, even at a small scale, we support a lot of the claims that we're making that kind of also help cities and other regulators think about, you know, how this industry should work overall, because it is very hard, I think, for a lot of these regulators to push back on existing operators when they are so big, they have so much money to lobby and other things, but also the data is relatively private. And so, you know, by doing it a different way, by employing drivers, which others have said they can't do, by having longer pickup times, which others have said they can't do, you know, and making it work, I think that sets a real standard for what we can bring to the table for cities as we operate in them.
What about expansion? I know, like you said, you're in Dallas, have had success in Dallas. You got some great funding. Talk about, as much as you can, expansion plan and challenges of expansion. You're here locally, so it's easier to build in the place you know and are in. Expansion and challenges of expansion as you start to build.
Yeah, Dallas. Well, we picked Dallas actually not because I lived here, but because we think it's a great market to prove initially. The reason we like Dallas is because it's actually relatively average. A lot of people that live in Dallas don't like to hear that, but it's average on a lot of the factors that we look at in terms of selecting a good city for our operation. It has average commute times, average distance to the airport, average density of our target population. And so in doing something that is kind of counterintuitive and at least on the surface so different than what our competitors are doing, we believe that the best way to allow us to expand and to raise more capital and to build this business is to prove in a city like Dallas that we can make it work, right? That not only can I just talk about all the factors that are going to make us different, but that I can prove that those factors result in a profitable business model, actually something that most of our competitors haven't been able to prove. And so that's what we're laser focused on today is proving the economics of the model here in Dallas, proving that customers will choose us, that drivers will choose us, and that we can turn the business from, you know, something that could be extremely capital intensive to roll out to something that makes a lot of sense because the economics work. We're close to doing that, by the way. In just 8 months of operation here in Dallas, we're very close to break even on a gross margin basis, and we think that that's a huge testament to the fact that, you know, what we are doing is working. We've got a little bit more work to do there, and as soon as we're able to do that, I think we'll then be in a place to start thinking about expansion. Our goal is to do that in early 2020, and so right now, you know, I mean, we're not ready to announce new cities or exactly when that's going to happen, but as soon as we nail the operation here, we think that that'll allow us to kind of take on, you know, many new places and to attract the type of capital that we want to attract in order to do that expansion.
Do you think you'll do one city at a time, Sora, or do you think, again, I'm not asking.
We can't, days, I mean, forever we won't be able to do that. Yeah. I mean, most likely we'll go to another city and then maybe a couple cities and then, you know, but within a short period of time for the business to really make sense and to have the kind of brand presence that we believe that we need in order to compete overall in the market. Of course, we're going to need to be able to expand quickly, right? So it may be a couple cities in 2020, a handful of cities in 2021, a really large group of cities in 2022. Yeah. And, you know, and but in 3 to 5 years, we need to be a national presence around the US and a brand name that people know when they think of safe and consistent transportation.
I think Will just gave us his roadmap. He didn't realize that. His lawyers are like, what are you talking about? So, you know,
as long as you can interpret a couple and a handful and things
like that.
Hey, I've got a great imagination. We can figure it out. We'll fill in the blanks. So you mentioned Dallas being average as far as like a composition. But I think I just didn't think about it. It's a spread out city, but it has a very pretty solid, dense population in multiple areas. It's distributed between far north Dallas, our area, and Dallas downtown, and then Fort Worth. But then you've got a lot of suburbs in between. Yeah, you're making sense. And I can see where Dallas can be replicated in many, many other cities. It's not just the high concentration LAs, New Yorks of the world. You know what I mean? It's almost like, it seems to me you fit, I think, a better demographic of average cities. I think that's where I think you guys are going to be very successful because the saturation of the others, you know, compared to like Uber and Lyft and taxi industry. I don't know. Am I wrong on here? I'm just thinking like the high concentration, I could see where you guys are just going to have a lot of competition by virtue of all those providers. But if you're more distributed, like I'm just thinking out loud here and it's no knock on anything, but Midwest, I could see you guys rocking it. It tends to be more affluent as far as the money that will be willing to pay. Because their money, it goes further, Erin. She's making faces at me.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of...
Their money goes further. They're probably going to be looking for a service that matches a little bit more of the security, stability. I think that it appeals to the Midwest, for example. I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't know.
We believe that, you know, proving, for example, that a model works in San Francisco or New York, right? Those cities are multiple standard deviations away from the average American city.
Yeah.
And so proving something works there proves that it works in those two places. But proving that something works in Dallas kind of proves that it has the potential to work in many more places. And so that's really why we selected Dallas and why we're focused so hard on proving that it works here before we kind of go and start going, into major expansion.
Yeah, I'm just thinking like Seattle. Like I'm like thinking in my head, I think Seattle would be perfect, like high tech. It's a stretched out community and the traffic sucks and the drivers suck and I don't want to be held responsible for a rental car. I think I finally got like
Seattle, look out. Here we come.
I know.
Oh, he said it here. That was one of a couple. Just
exclusive. Hashtag exclusive from Will. So I want to shift a little bit, if you don't mind, because we're kind of like getting on. And it's a question that we're going to ask everyone from here on out. So, I mean, you are hustling. This is an amazing concept. It is unique, but it's not so drastically different that no one understands what you're talking about. They get the concept. This has got to take a hold of a lot of your time and your personal time. So I see that smile.
More than I expected.
More than you expected.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm pretty glad actually that I didn't know how hard this was going to be because I probably wouldn't have done it. And so I tell, you know, entrepreneurs that ask me all the time, should I do it? And I first tell them, absolutely, but don't spend too much time thinking about it because if you really research it enough and understand what it takes to start a business, you'll probably talk yourself out of it.
Exactly. So, I mean, you as a father, and I see it in your profile that you it's a prominent point of who you are and how you identify. So how starting a business like this, you're playing with some big boys and girls. How do you address it when you've got children at home, you've got a wife, and still make it happen and grow a business?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously really hard, but I think the way I think about it is that you have to integrate the two, right? And so... my family is a big part of my work life. My kids, you know, when they see an Alto driving on the street, they point it out. Like they love to sport their Alto t-shirts to school, which I'm sure their teachers think I'm using as cheap publicity. but the reality is that when I was making this decision to leave, you know, a good job and to, you know, try to do something really hard, it wasn't just my decision. It was my family's decision. It was a topic that over lots of glasses of wine and frankly, several months Kendall and I talked about and thought about and discussed the trade-offs of. And there are real trade-offs, right? I mean, in my old job, I traveled almost every week, multiple times a week, and was away from home a lot of nights. And I don't do that anymore. And so on a micro basis, my flexibility actually has increased. Right now I'm my own boss and I can decide to stay home and take my kids to school this morning like I did. But my macro flexibility has somehow decreased a little bit, right? I mean, I'm running a business I can't leave town for multiple weeks and just expect it to keep, going. And so but we thought about all those, we wrote them down, we discussed them and jointly came to the decision that was the right thing to do for our family and for the long-term future of our family. So I think going in with, even if I didn't know all of how difficult it was, going in with eyes wide open and understanding that trade-off is important. And then thinking of ways to bring, to integrate your family life and your work life. One of my colleagues has always said, she doesn't believe in work-life balance. She believes in work-life integration. And I've started to really, I think this thing is, when you look at a balance and you kind of look, they have to be kind of equal and always in balance, that's really, really hard to achieve. But if you find ways in which you can bring your family and work together, right, so that my family participates in my profession and sometimes my profession, interrupts my family. But, we found a way for us to integrate that in a way that feels very normal. And ultimately very balanced because, I can focus on the family when it's, when I want to and when it's necessary and when I can focus on the business when I need to and with the kind of clarity of knowing, my family's in it with me.
So let's shift a little bit different from your employees' perspectives. Then they're part of a growing business as well. And, they're not the CEO. So what's your perspective on, as you guys are growing and developing, how are you helping to foster, and I don't want to use that word balance, but that integration for
them? The culture, right? I mean, what we're trying to do is set a culture of exactly that, which is, it's not about inputs, it's about outputs. And so, I mean, hopefully the people that work for us would say, Will doesn't really care if I'm there. He cares that the work gets done. And so, we're creating a culture, hopefully, where people feel fine working from home when they need to because that's a viable alternative to get work done. That they see me showing up, today, not until after this podcast, because I took my kids to school this morning and then I came straight here and now I'm going to go to the office afterwards. But it's not about FaceTime. It's about output. And so, we judge, and this is that's probably something that I've taken away from my consulting career, but we judge performance at Alto based on what you get done, not how you get it done. And I think that creates a culture for people to feel comfortable integrating those two things in a, hopefully a way that they see me doing and others doing in our leadership team.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, I was just, I love it. I think it's incredible.
Okay. And I love what you're saying. But I also noticed with other businesses in general, and try not to compare, but I'm just trying to outline this space that we're in. There has been discussion of, oh, no, we want the output, how you get it done, blah, blah, blah. But there are companies that are shifting back to getting people back into a building because they want them to collaborate better or increase the communication. Because when you're out of sight, you're out of mind. People forget that, hey, Billy over here is employed, but Billy comes in once a week versus Mary, who's like, no, I'm going to come into the office 4 days a week. So help me understand what your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Well, one, I'm not saying that we don't work and that, I want to get it across. Like, I was up at 6 o'clock this morning before my kids were, checking email and getting things done so that I could have the free time to then take them to school. So that's one thing. And then the second is, I mean, this is a place where I think you can create balance because, I totally lost my train of thought.
No worries. No, but think of it this way. So Billy comes in once a week because he lives maybe 2 hours away, whatever, but he does tremendous amount of work. But there is something about an out of sight, out of mind, where when you're in a group setting like this, but Billy's not here,
Billy's missing out.
Billy's missing out. Or is he? Like, what's your thought on that?
Yeah. So then that way, I think that is the way in which we can create balance, right? I mean, we have a headquarters where everybody has a seat and, you know, and we do get together and collaborate. So it's not that we don't expect people ever to come into the office or that frankly, you know, it does need to stay in balance, right? I mean, I'm going into the office later today because I need to collaborate on several things with members of my team. And we have all of our team is based here in Dallas. Actually, we've made a decision as a company not to have remote hires, although there have been people that we've been interested in other parts of the world that we've wanted to potentially hire, but have decided not to just yet because we do think that creating space for a young company, especially to collaborate in that way, is really important. So I guess, you know, that, I mean, there's always trade-offs, but I think the best we can do is to create, hopefully, for me to role model the type of culture that we want to have and to show how I try to create that balance at the office versus away from the office and integrate my life with my profession. And if I can do that and we can help others see that, then, you know, ultimately you're always going to have somebody that's, you know, outside of that balance, but hopefully, you know, we can manage that in a way that for most people it works.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, there's something you said about workaholics, and if you're working for or, you know, with an alcohol or not alk, that was Freudian, workaholic, I could see where you're creating a culture of almost what's that thing? Urgency all the time, the reactive culture, which I don't recommend.
Yeah, and I mean just I think that in many ways, like, I'll be a self-admitted workaholic, right? I mean, we're running a 24/7 operation here. I'm not. Right. I don't want to come across and have people think that this guy's like, oh, you know, you can just. It's easy. It's not
yeah,
easy,
yeah.
Right?
Work a couple hours a day. You got yourself.
I'm playing golf. Like, I haven't played golf in a while. So it's not about not working hard. It's about figuring out how to work right, you know,
smarter.
And for you, right? I mean, because everybody's definition of balance is different, and integration is different, and so. You know, for some people on our team, that may mean I want to get into the office a little bit later, but I'm willing to stay a little bit later at night to watch, you know, by the way, nights and weekends are our most busy time. So yeah. On our operating side, that's actually the time when we need the most eyes on the road, as it were. And so we try to be flexible, but also transparent about kind of what the requirements are. It is going to be a hard, like, we don't hire anybody saying this is going to be an easy job. You can work from home 4 days a week and, you know, and just check in over Slack. That's not the expectation we set. And so I think that we get a lot of people that say, yeah, I'm really excited about building this. I'm really excited about this being part of my professional identity. And I'm really excited about figuring out a way to make that work for me and my family, which is the decision that I made and that I'm hopeful that, you know, a lot of people on our team are making.
We're at time. I was just going to ask the last question. I don't know if you have one more, but I'm going to throw this one at you. You can answer it. You can't. But part of this whole reason why we have this podcast is to help highlight companies like what you're doing, amazing things, and hopefully partner anything you guys need right now, anything you're looking for specifically. I know you got a lot of money, so you're good there. You don't need any more.
We never have enough money. If anybody wants to offer money, please email me.
Anything else you guys need right now? Like, relationship partnerships, but are you opening up more funding? If again,
yeah, so we're,
well,
I mean, I think it would be disingenuous to say we're not always fundraising. I think any company at our stage is always raising and always looking for partners to help us continue to grow the business. So that's definitely on the table. I think in addition, we're looking for people to ride, right? Give us a try. Tell your friends about us, whether you're in Dallas or somewhere else, right? I mean, as we can build this brand and create a differentiation in the space, we think that's really going to be valuable for the business. And so the best thing and the most help that people can do is either sign up to Drive at drivealto.com or sign up to Ride at ridealto.com and come give us a try and tell us what we're doing well and how we can continue to make it better.
All right. We'll have those on our notes page too. Go ahead.
Absolutely. No. Well, thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I have no other questions that I can ask on the podcast.
I'm going to try you guys next week. I have to travel.
Perfect.
I'll write a review.
Please
what?
Do. Yeah.
Hashtag review. I'm kidding now. We have an ongoing joke of hashtagging as many things. I'm like, oh, it sounds like a lot of automation going on here. A lot of AI. I'm throwing this at last minute. Yeah. A lot of AI. a lot of IoT devices going into the cars. No, but Will, thank you so much. I think, Aaron, if we're done, that wraps it up for another episode of Innovation Calling.